You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
We do have Ross Tucker coming up in 1 hour's time. We got to get back into the Cavs' great amount of success. We got a slight thing on that. I actually have something for JP later in the show, but right now we are all Browns with our next guest, Mark Ross of NFL Network, where he works as an NFL Network analyst. He's a former NFL executive. He joins us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. Andrew Berry spoke about whether or not the Browns needed a total teardown for this team to get back to where they were a couple years ago. Do you think that's where we are with this Browns team?
Yeah, I love Andrew Berry. I respect the guy. But, I think that where the Browns are now, I don't know if there's any other team really in that position. I don't want to say dire, but it's going to be hard to climb out of for them, and I just don't see an easy path, really, to do that with their situation, with personnel, the cap space, still the Deshaun Watson situation lingering over them. So, yeah, I know you got to, as a GM and forward-facing, you got to say the right things, but, behind the scenes, for the path to say, we'll be good in a year, two, 3 years, I'm just not seeing that right now.
How does he keep his job, then?
The owner likes him. that's pretty much the bottom line with GMs is, if you're tight with the owner and the owner wants you to be around, that's what happens, and it doesn't matter what the fans think. Doesn't matter what the local media thinks. If, Haslam likes Andrew Berry, wants him to be there, he will be there.
Mark, do you think the Browns are more poorly coached or more poorly constructed?
I think it's both. I think once the Deshaun Watson situation was there and you saw how bad he was, and I'd been saying it all year, and, it wasn't going to take long from game one from last year, what I saw in Deshaun Watson, to say, yes, this is the same guy. He's pretty much shot. I was on with Cleveland radio station early and said, you'll know, when you're in personnel and you scout and, there's hope in things. But when you watch the film and you see these certain negative aspects of someone's game, it's like, yep, they're pretty much done, especially at the quarterback position. And when you game one, you saw it. Game two is like, okay, this guy is, it's who he is now. He's not going to go back to that person, that Houston Texans top five quarterback anymore. This is just who he is now. It all begins, starts, and ends with that and how bad he played. And, they really had no chance. And then once that goes to the rest of the team and the other guys are thinking, we've got no chance with this guy, then it just starts the negative thing. And I said, play Jameis. I know it'd be fun. I didn't think Jameis was the answer, but as you've seen the last few weeks with Jameis, at least it's fun and you get some yards and get some interceptions and some competitiveness. You beat the Ravens. But, overall, it's a combination of both. When teams are bad, it's not just one thing or the other. It's a combination of a lot of things.
Yeah, Jameis is fun, Mark, but we all know Jameis is obviously not the answer for next year, and yep. I don't think DTR is, and I don't think Bailey nope. Zappe is or any of those guys. If you're the Browns then, do you draft a quarterback or do you try to get someone like a Justin Fields or someone that's out there that maybe was a starter this year or has an opportunity to be a starter? What's your approach?
Well, where are you trying to go as an organization? You just trying to get a guy to get through so you can be 7-8 wins, or are you trying to win the Super Bowl? And when I worked for personnel departments, it was always about winning Super Bowls and not just be competitive or be relevant or get to the playoffs. So, signing someone, a Justin Fields type, is not going to win you the Super Bowl. He's been around, got benched. Drafting people, it's hard. It's hard to get that guy. But that's still really the avenue that works. And you just got to hit on the right guy. And that's extremely hard, and it's tough. And, the ones that have done that, you see they're at the top of the league now, and the ones that haven't, they're struggling. And you're talking about how quickly you can rebuild. Well, there's certain teams that have been in quarterback, the bottom of the barrel quarterbacks for a long time, and they've been struggling for a long time. So, whatever that approach is, getting a guy, drafting him, wherever that is, or hitting on the right guy is the way to do it.
Mark Ross, NFL Network analyst on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We know. I mean, you know, we had 11 years for you with the Giants there at a big level position, but you were also in the Eagles organization when they actually drafted Donovan McNabb. So I just, like you mentioned, you got to get it right, and it's incredibly hard. What are the factors that go into getting it right?
Yeah, and that was the year Cleveland had the first pick and took Tim Couch. Thanks for doing that.
I didn't have to do that there, Mark.
Sorry. No, I was just trying to recollect. I like my memory. But third pick was Akili Smith, so, and then Dante Culpepper was later, Cade McNown, some other guys. Sean King was in the second round, Joe Germain. But for us, Donovan was just always the guy, number one, on the field. And we were lucky that Andy Reid knew, like, Donovan's skill set there, that, like, yes, I can work with this. It wasn't, no, I don't. He wasn't a traditional, you know, that traditional drop back guy at Syracuse. They did a lot of interesting, funky things at Syracuse in the offense, and Donovan was extremely athletic, and we were lucky to just, Andy had just got there and was in sync with the personnel department to say, yeah, oh yeah, this guy could do some things. I want to work with this. So we were lucky in that aspect, where it was that synergy between the scouting staff and the coaching staff to take that guy and say, yes, his skill set can do it. But also, Donovan could handle the Philadelphia media. You know, he's from Chicago, went to Syracuse, was the Big East at the time when it was different Big East now, you know, when that was really a premier conference. And we knew he could handle it as opposed to some other guys who were concerned about. But, you know, moving forward, it's I think people always have to realize every draft cycle – however, let's say there's four or five quarterbacks, so we try to build them up, the media, everybody, like, oh, they're all going to be great, and they're not. It's really going to be maybe one guy of that. And so we have to really have to change our thinking about quarterbacks and who's good. Really, there's only a few elite players, and each draft cycle, there may be one of those elite players that enter into that elite group. And it's extremely difficult. You had to identify not only on the field, off the field, how they can handle all those situations and really raise the level of people around them. To me, that's the biggest factor. Great quarterback, they raise the level of everyone around them.
How many quarterbacks do you see in this draft
that can raise the level
of everyone? Zero.
And I haven't dug deep into the scouting aspect, but just the little bit that I've seen on all of them, I don't look at these games and say, yep, that guy is the one that we need to get, and he can really take an organization to another level.
I just want to be clear, between the Tim Couch thing and that answer, you're not sandbagging us right now, right? You're not just kicking a fan base when we're
down. I have no dog in a hunt. If I was working for a team, sure, but I just give it honest and give my analysis on these situations. But, no, I wish I could tell you. And leading up the draft season, yep, there's going to be five guys that everybody's talking about, that these guys are all going to be stars. And if you look at the last five drafts and look at the quarterbacks, and it's carnage, you know, pretty much. And there's a couple guys that are succeeding, but for the most part, it's a lot of misses.
Mark, looking to the now with the Browns today, Andrew Berry specified time after time, hey, we got these eight games to go. We got eight games. We're going to try and get it right for these eight games. And that leads the question of what is getting it right? Is that trying to win as many games as you can, or is that trying to set yourself up best for the future?
I'm not sure. So, you know, I've been a part of 2-3-13 teams, first with Philly before we drafted Donovan, and then with the Giants, and we got let go. But, yeah, I mean, and, you know, even those games, you're just trying to figure out your roster, what guys are going to be around for the future. But for the Browns, I'm not sure, you know, what that means. If that's winning enough games to keep everybody around, if that's just analyzing teams, or if they really think they still have a shot to do something, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not there. I don't know what that is. But so depending on where your organization is and that next year, what you're trying to do, it could all be different. What this sort of feeling is when you know the season is kind of lost, and all right, the powers that be, the owner, the GM, the head coach, what they're all talking about and what they're saying, who's going to be here, who's making these decisions. And it's different if you know you're going to be a part of the plan going forward when you're a decision maker, as opposed to, well, I might be going out of here in 2 months, so I'll make decisions differently than if I know I have some security.
Yeah, Mark, earlier when we asked about Andrew Berry, you'd mentioned, well, it comes down to the owner. Does the owner like you? So if we apply that same logic to Stefanski, I'm not going to ask you, do you think Stefanski will keep his job? But I'll put it this way. Do you feel like if Stefanski was on the open market and they did fire him, do you feel like, how many teams do you feel like would be in the Kevin Stefanski business? Like, I want to hire that guy. That's the type of head coach I want.
Yeah, I think there would be some. I mean, he won one or two coaches of the year there. And that's, you know, I know he worked some magic, and that's amazing how quickly things change in the NFL, right? Go from coach of the year to saying, okay, you might not have a job. And there's been, I've been a part of that on both ways where it's like, yep, make the playoffs. Next year you do bad and the coach is gone. So, you know, I think he would get interest. Whether someone would actually finalize that, I'm not sure. But I think he has shown enough that people around the league feel he is a quality coach.
Mark, looking at the Deshaun situation here, because Andrew Berry didn't rule out that he would return, didn't rule out that that he would be here next year either. He really didn't rule out anything with Deshaun.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything the Browns could have done to make this work with Deshaun, or do you think that this thing was just going to fail because of maybe where Deshaun was after everything?
Yeah, I just think he was shot, guys, to be honest. Is it, you know, whatever, you know, physical gifts he may have had, I think even bigger to me that separates great players from Hall of Fame players, from elite, all time, is their mental. And, you know, the confidence, the poise, the knowing, the feeling, the game, whatever that is. And when I just watched him, he just looked like I just didn't really know how to, you know, be confidently play football anymore. And, you know, I don't know whether it was the off field that led that, whatever, but it just didn't look like that. So I don't think they could have put better talent around him or better coaching or whatever it is. When he just, you just watch Browns games and you saw, it's like, man, this guy can't play. And you saw it the next week and the next week. And, you know, when guys are kind of shot, kind of like a fighter, you just don't get that back. It's just kind of over with. And that's just what I saw from Deshaun and his Cleveland tenure.
Mark, we appreciate you, buddy. Thanks again. We definitely don't think you were sandbagging, just having some fun there. But great stuff.
Yeah. Next call, draft time, I'll say how great all the quarterbacks are that you guys have a chance to get.
That's what I cannot wait for. Be good, buddy. Thank you again.
All right. Take care.
NFL Network analyst Mark Ross there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Knowing the right guy is the way to do it.
Mark Ross, former NFL executive, now with NFL Network as an analyst, giving his thoughts on where the Browns are and kind of really, that's at the heart of the quarterback move. And what you do this offseason, what you do the rest of the season, kind of lines it up. But I think he put it the perfect way. Like, if you're content going, and let's just be honest, what the Saints have done the last 4 years, which is, hey, we used to contend for Super Bowls, and now we're going to contend for 8-9 or 9-8. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
And then the other way to do it is obviously do something a little more elongated, but with the intention of winning Super Bowls.
What it does, in many respects, it does keep your job. Like, I think it's a thing that Tomlin, in the end of Ben Roethlisberger, when we were calling him Rigatoni Roethlisberger because he had such a noodle arm, and then you go into Mason Rudolph and all these other guys, it's like, that's exactly what he was doing. That's why Justin Fields is the perfect example to bring up here. Like, what are you doing? Are you trying to win Super Bowls, or are you trying to be a team that gets to 500 and maybe makes a postseason appearance to then just be like the Steelers were last year, double-digit dogs against the Buffalo Bills and never stood a chance? Like, that's, I find it so fascinating.
You can't go, though, from we have to move on from Baker, and then the only option that we can do to do this is to trade for Deshaun. You can't do
because
that.
Because they made a Super Bowl play.
Yeah, you can't.
And then scurry away from your identity. Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
You can't do that.
It would be complete hypocrisy is what it would be. Like, if they decide to go that route, let's say, oh, we're going to get a Justin Fields, we're going to try to turn Gardner Minshew into something, whatever this ends up being, if they go that route, then they are completely straying from the identity that they told us who they are.
Well, and that's kind of what left me so uncomfortable with the final 8 games of the season, was that it sure seemed like Andrew was trying to put a lot of stock into, we just got to coach better and play better for the final 8 games of the season, when I hate to be that guy, winning is not in your best interest.
No.
Competing is, but winning 6 of, and they're probably not because of the schedule, but winning of 6 of 8 games while you're trying is just as destructive.
But you see the cycle they've gotten themselves into. This is why it feels like there's just, they got mush for brains right now, because they're all very smart people, and we know that. And I believe in my heart of hearts, they have done this the right way with the Super Bowls with an S in mind, multiple Super Bowls. That was what the big move was about. But now they're trying to preserve their jobs.
Yeah.
And you see how it flies in the face of that. You can no longer go for Super Bowls right now because that's not attainable in the moment while also being able to keep your jobs.
I don't know if you agreed with me or not. But when Mark said, what was your question about Andrew Berry? Because I asked the first question.
It was very simple. I think it was like five words. Like, does Andrew Berry keep his job?
Yeah. And the only rebuttal that Mark Ross had.
That's six words, actually.
Who admitted, by the way, that he liked Andrew Berry personally, which is an eraser phrase.
Ivy League guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course.
They're both Ivy Leaguers.
I like everybody. But
that's
why
everyone loves you so much with that Bowling Green Ivy.
Yeah. That's that. And it's just salt and Vinny's. It's these eyes, man. They get me a lot in this life, right? Slept my way to the middle.
I'm thinking of Michael Cera and Superbad. These eyes.
But I got to be honest with you. Like, if the best defense of a guy that's been here for 5 years is the owner likes you, then maybe the owner needs to be the adult in the room.
Oh, that was Mark saying, I've been around long enough to know how this goes, and that's the only chance that he has of being able to keep his job.
I think that's really interesting because most times, NFL people go, well, they've won two. They do the, well, Stefanski's the two-time coach of the year, which, by the way, did for Stefanski. But, Andrew Berry, I mean, they've got two playoff seasons and the playoff win, like Andrew Berry. I was expecting more of a defense of Andrew Berry
He's got no defense. That's it. That's exactly, he basically, in many ways, told us his answer without telling us his answer. He's got no defense of Andrew Berry. Nobody that's around the league for as long as he's been has a defense of Andrew Berry, because you don't go 5 years with one playoff win and walk around like you're the greatest thing to ever exist. It doesn't work that way. You got to win games. You got to win playoff games.
If the Browns fired Andrew Berry but made Glenn Cook their new GM, who is, I think, the assistant GM or scouting director, would they get picks for hiring? Because you know how, like,
I don't think it works if it's your same team.
Oh, that's Bubkiss.
Yeah, they got some for Kwesi Adofo-Mensah when he went to the Vikings. I don't think you get it for elevating people within your own organization.
Well, that's Bubkiss. You should. You hired. You won. You've promoted from within. You've hired. No,
maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know. I am not up on that part of the language.
I have not read that yet. All right.
Are you trying to say we promote someone so you get a third round pick?
And
you
a fourth round pick. I think you get a couple third round picks. Yeah. Yeah. At this point, come on. Give me all the comp picks.
We can't act like being a GM is like, it's all the same.
That's what I'm saying.
It's all the same.
I'm saying, like, if you said, all right, who's a coach that really, you know, gets the blood flowing? It's Mike Vrabel. If you say, all right, now who's the GM? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm not.
We don't have a list of GMs that we just love and are sitting there waiting.
Because proven GMs don't become available. And then when you do have them, you fire them after 2 years.
They might go for somebody that had already previously been a GM and maybe does have a track record of being able to select, I don't know, quarterbacks, stuff like that.
Where are they?
No, I know it's tough to find. And I'm not going to bring John Dorsey's name into the mix again for the second time already in this show. But Andrew Berry, when he was hired.
That's the funniest thing.
Andrew Berry, when he was hired, was the youngest GM in the sport.
So now we got to get an old guy.
I think you go old guy now. I think you zig and then zag, right? They never go youngest guy in the sport to then go youngest guy in the sport again.
So while we're on the topic, would you like to talk about something that isn't depressing right now?
Sure.
Actually, I will say.
Sure.
Expectation thing kind of actually does have me a little depressed.
Okay.
I want to get into the Channing Frye in a minute thing because he put some big expectations in the Cavs. But I'm pretty excited for tonight. Go get that record,
you
Kings.
Want your record. Your record that I didn't even realize you pulled. You pulled the wool over my eyes is what you did.
I'm that kind of guy. I thought
the record we were breaking a LeBron James set record because you'd said you wanted this record because you wanted something for them.
Yeah.
You wanted something that wasn't in the LeBron James history books. Yeah. And we're chasing down the 1976-1977 Cavs team.
Yeah, no,
a Cavs team, by the way, that started off with this record and then finished four games above 500.
I'm by the way, I never said they were taking this record from LeBron.
Okay.
That is not what I inferred.
Okay.
Although I think that's what you got out of it.
I clearly misheard.
So it was the idea that I want a record for this team that LeBron hasn't had.
Yeah.
And so tonight, though, I also realized just while we're on it, I also realize there's no way in hell they're catching the Warriors record. Yeah. Do you know?
I have no idea what the Warriors record is.
So, all right. So, tonight, if they win against the Pelicans, that's 9 wins. That's great. 9-0 to start the season.
Yeah.
That's the franchise record.
Okay.
I would like you to guess what the Warriors started in 2015, 2016.
my thought process goes to 26, but that seems incredibly high. But at the same time, it's incredibly high. There's no way they started 26-0, okay. And then because they lost what, 9 games that year?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Yeah, just a niner.
Because that was the one that lost to the Cavs in the finals, and they went 73-9, and that's
why 3-1 lead.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Forgot it.
Absolutely incredible. 26 is my answer. That feels incredibly high.
Are you just doing it because you'd rather go over than go under?
Is this like my $1 Bob situation, is it?
I mean,
it's like the inverse of that.
I think it's the Price is Right. You can't go over.
Oh, I can't go over?
Everybody plays with the Price is Right rules. That's just basic.
No, screw that. I can go over in this game. No, I feel fine going over.
Mac,
no,
can he go over?
26 seems high.
Mac's blowing his nose at me, dude. Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah, we're playing the Price is Right rules, right? No going over?
Yeah, no going over.
Okay.
Well, then I would just say 9 to make sure I don't go over.
Well, that's
see how that kills the
disingenuous.
Bit? See how that kills the bit right there?
You can't go that under either.
Bum, 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 bum.
All right. Ooh! No, we're going to do it like the Showcase Showdown, which is can't go over,
but
I'm going to give Kayla a chance to guess, and if she's closer to the number...
Okay.
Oh, man, did we just... We're spitting fire
right
now.
I thought we were
going
to play Mountain Man, where I just, once it goes, we do the yodeler. Yeah, yeah, we do the music up,
and then
once I go over...
Now you're really killing the bit.
Because he's that far off from a mountain man.
No, everybody... It's the yodeler. That's
I know
the name
it's
of the
yodeler, but like top ahead, I'm like the mountain man, and you know exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, because I knew it... Go ahead. Actually, would you like Kayla to answer first?
I'd have no idea what a dishwasher costs right now, or any appliances or anything like that.
$9.99, Bob.
I would be awful at the Price is Right game at the current moment. I'm going to change my answer then. I locked in at 26. We're changing it because I want to change it. 17 is going to be my new guess.
17, Kayla. What is, again, we're trying not to go over. What is the record number of wins out of the gate for a team to start the season? He said 17. Be funny if she $1 bobbed him.
That just seems high to me. That seems hard to do.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
I would say 14.
Did you say 18?
Yes, that's what I said.
I think
said
she
18.
Said 18.
Yeah, I did.
That's what Mac. Is that what you heard?
Oh,
what
18? I totally would have won. What happened?
No. She said 18.
I said 18.
It's 24 wins. Yeah. Sorry, she $1 bobbed you.
You talked me off my first one. That was really
what
close.
Do I get?
But you would have gone over.
That was really, I know, but that
you get
was,
to be right over JP.
That's
really funny.
They got to pay taxes on that new car.
24 wins. That is dumb.
It's not within reach.
It's right up there with the consecutive games hit streak. Good luck. You might get to 30.
Well, think about
maybe you get to 35.
How many back-to-backs did they have in that stretch, too? Because what makes this Cavs run impressive to me is they went that Friday and then Saturday, and then Donovan beat the Bucks because Donovan played 22 minutes on Friday night and was well-rested because they had to start off. They started off the first quarter doubling up 36-18, so they had a chance there. You need to have the back-to-backs go the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have the travel situation go the right way. There's so many things.
You're a big travel guy.
So many things need to go in your favor. My friends in the desert care about the travel in a big way. But you need to have so many things go your right way that are out of your control to even get there.
So the only downside to if they get the record tonight is it is going to continue the thing that is going to harsh my mellow more than I need it to. Which is the expectations are going to start to get out of control for the Cavs soon.
You mean exactly what happened to the Guardians?
Yeah, yeah.
We went through 3 months of awesome baseball. They continued to just beat up on everybody, yep. And then the expectations got way out of hand.
And then people were mad they lost in the ALCS.
Yes,
yep.
Because after the first 3 months, people were convinced themselves that this was a World Series or bust team, when in reality, it shouldn't have been a World Series or bust team.
And I submit, for your and everybody else's enjoyment, Cavs legend... Channing Frye was on NBA TV and I think proved my point here with his expectations for the Cavaliers.
This team is going to be very good. They're a top three team in the Eastern Conference since Philly is hurt. This team needs to go to the Eastern Conference Finals or we're still going to be disappointed. It's just a fact. So if Garland and Mobley aren't running at that motor or at that level, this team doesn't have a chance. And it's just a fact.
If they start 9-0, or even if they start 8-0, and they spurn this into a top two seed, this idea of if it's anything but the Eastern Conference Finals, that pressure is going to get unbearable at some point a lot quicker than with the Guardians, because you still have the weight of the Donovan trade and people weaponize that all the time. And I just hate it. Just enjoy the good basketball. We don't need to put expectations on this.
I also look at their offensive numbers, Nick, and they're top five in a million different categories. They're just basic stuff. They're second in points. That's all you really need to know. But they're top five in a bunch of categories offensively. I don't know that this is a team that's going to be up there the entire stretch of the year.
So how far do you fall?
I mean,
what do you think? If they level out, where do they level out?
Great jump. If they were somewhere between like 8 to 12, would have been awesome. Mm-hmm. I would have been over the moon with that type of jump, bringing Atkinson into the mix. I think it's been such a drastic jump based off of the core four and everything we know about the core four, and then obviously the other pieces, that I hope it's sustainable. I don't know that it is.
But it's so, because we've had the sustainability conversation, but just to kind of start here, because there's the other half of that we got to get to in a minute. But is this where your expectation, like, when you heard that, because I didn't hear anybody preseason, fans said Eastern Conference Finals. I didn't hear anybody in the media. Well, there might have been one or two local guys, but I didn't hear anybody in the media outside of Cleveland go, Eastern Conference Finals.
No, especially when we were playing with, and it was a wrong assumption, but I think everyone was playing with the idea that the Bucks would be much better than they are right now. They were playing with the idea that the moves that the 76ers had made would all of a sudden have them figuring it all out instead. Both those situations are an absolute disaster. That clears the way. The Knicks made a bunch of moves. I think people expect them to eventually get there, but right now that hasn't paid off for them in spades. Like, I think a lot of us looked at what happened last year, and that was the time to strike. It didn't happen, obviously. You take it for what it's worth, but I think a lot of people thought that the East right now would be much better than what it is.
I just don't like when the national media gloms onto you after 8 games. That's
I think
all.
They need to glam onto something, though. I think that's what they're telling us. Because, again, 76ers are a dumpster fire, and Joel Embiid is shoving reporters. Yeah, the Bucks are ready to fire Doc Rivers, and Giannis wants to be traded. Like, absolute chaos scenarios. Nobody can say anything about the Knicks because it didn't happen in the snap of a fingers. And the Celtics, people are bored with the Celtics. They're too good. They're at the top, and everyone knows that. So, like, the Cavs are the darlings of the East. That's what they are right now. Like, they're the feel-good, positive NBA story. Yeah, so it makes sense why people would like gravitate towards
and
that.
And that's the thing that they do, where then if you have any momentary stress, they find the bad.
They're not here to stay.
Yeah.
That's the difference. You and me, we're here to stay.
When it says, oh, you're talking about the national media
folks?
Yeah,
they're not here to stay. They're just taking the good story and running with it.
216-474-0092. Channing Frye says the Cavs need to make the Eastern Conference Finals. Would you use the word need? And we do have to talk about the rest of the Eastern Conference and whether it's going to be this, dare I say, easy on 92.3 The Fan. But we're having a conversation about the Cavaliers. And again, I'm allergic right now to expectations. Every time somebody puts expectations on this, that's when things start to sour. Because the thing that happens is when you have expectations and at any point there's any delineation from that thing being the reality, people react poorly, and sports fans in general and sports media react poorly. I'm just not there. I'm just looking for 9-0 tonight and just looking to have some fun.
I like the one game and approach mentality, but I do think if we're going bigger picture, though, at a minimum, we have to at least maintain what they told us the entire time their own bar was, and that's the linear growth. That was Kobe Altman's big thing, right? Each year, they had to go a little bit better than they were previously. So if last year they won a playoff round, and then in round two they were out in 5 games, is it now advancing then to the conference finals? Or is it just making it into a 6 or 7 game stretch in the round two? Like, what exactly is the linear growth?
So I think it depends on how the rest of the East looks. Because you were kind of throwing it up there with all the other teams in the East, and the Cavs and the Celtics are the only two teams in the Eastern Conference with records above 500. So I'll be honest with you, if the East is that bad, it won't be. But if it's that bad and the Sixers are down bad and the Knicks don't kind of figure it out, then it probably will be. If you're the number one seed or two seed and the rest of the East looks like mush, yeah. who the hell thinks the East is going to be this bad?
No, but we didn't think they were going to be this bad last year either, though, for being honest about it.
I mean, they were, what do you mean by that bad? I don't think the East was, I mean, it was worse than the year before.
It was way weaker than what expectations were if you would have said, I don't know, 4 months before the playoffs, because Giannis had the big injury, and then obviously we saw everything that dismantled the 76ers as well with Embiid, and it collapsed on itself.
Yeah, but I think
the Pacers were in the conference finals last year.
I think those are injuries.
If we were on the right side of the bracket, though, last year, we make it to the conference finals.
Yeah, and honestly, it probably saves JB's job, but you probably would have just gotten lucky to be on the right side of the bracket, right?
That's all it was. That's all it was. It was just being on the right on the that's where the Cavs season ended short, is because
like it's the Nate McMillan and
we took on the Celtics in the second round.
But in the bubble being the in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like you're gonna get there. I think that, like, here's the thing. If you're going to make it this year, I want it because you're one of the two best teams left in the Eastern Conference. So a lot of what you're asking, though, is because you're asking the right question. But I think there has to be some flexibility there. And I also have to think, like, the reason why I hated the prisoner of the moment, got to be the Eastern Conference Finals, by anybody in the national media, let alone somebody I think is funny and charming and amazing and Channing Frye.
Oh, that was a lot of really nice words you said there. Are you trying to butter him up like Barry did DePodesta?
I want to be best friends with Channing Frye.
That was nice.
The man's got a wine company. He talks hoops all day.
Do you even drink wine?
No, but I can learn.
Okay, I didn't think so.
I can learn.
All right.
I want to be his turtle. I want to be a hangers-on, right? I just, like, you be the Vince. You be the face of this operation. Yeah. I'll be your gopher. Just a couple hundred K a year, and I'll just be a happy,
that's it,
fat lackey who just makes you laugh. I will be that for you, Channing Frye.
That was so disrespectful to Turtle.
I'm not talking about Jerry Ferrara. I'm talking about actual Turtle in the show. That's exactly what Turtle was.
He did it much better, though. He was very cool. He wasn't just taking $200,000 and drinking wine. He didn't turn into Paul Giamatti in Sideways.
Yeah, he really earned it. He really earned
it. He was one of the best characters in the show. There's no question.
Yeah, but it's because he was lovable, not because we're
dated
like that guy.
Dated
got
all the
it.
Best women. Like he had it somehow.
That turtle's got it.
He just did.
He's really the brains of this operation.
As the show morphed on, everyone just turned into mush, and then Turtle's character just thrived.
But no, I mean that's why. Like, I don't expect the East to be this bad. I don't know that the Knicks are going to have the same collective spirit as they did last year. They might have ruined that by trading for Cat. Your best player can be kind of a beta.
And now all the rumors out of New York is they just have no depth is the big key word out of New York. I don't know what exactly that means with them, but that's like the Knicks fans are panicking about their depth right now.
Subtracted was Julius Randle and DiVincenzo, and they brought in Cat. Like, what changed here? Anyways, I digress. No, I don't expect the East to be this bad. So part of me, like, because you're team regression for the Cavs, right? Offensively.
Offensively, only because everyone's going to be team regression when they're off to this hot of a start offensively.
They're not the best offensive team in the NBA. They're top five.
They're one of. They got the number two scoring offense, and then in basically every metric you can come up with, they're top five. I didn't see it coming. I don't know that part of their game is something that I feel like the core four is like, this is definitely here to stay.
So,
I hope I'm wrong.
I'm more in the I don't know of could happen, but even if there's a regression, I think they're still going to be top 10.
Which I think we're both on the same page with. So, we're on board.
Which, by the way, I think you can go out there and get past Eastern Conference expectations, meaning regular season expectations. I think you can slingshot past that with a top 10 offense if you match it with a top 10 defense. You can be one of the four best teams in the NBA
for sure
with that formula. But like I'm not banking on the regression from the Cavs because I just don't know. I am banking on a regression to the mean in the Eastern Conference because there's too many teams with too much talent for it not to go better. And again, I don't know who they are. I think it's the Knicks. I don't know about Philly because the whole Paul George, Maxi, Embiid thing was always a weird.
You see, it's already going off the rails.
I mean, it felt a lot
like who are you putting in your corner of like I trust them to get leaps better. I think I'm with you in that. I think the Knicks are going to be a much better team like 3 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that thing in Milwaukee is an absolute disaster, Nick.
Yeah, but
it shouldn't be, but it is.
But that I think that's also us looking at a 1-6 record. There's no way anybody can look at a 1-6 record and go, they'll figure it out. Even if you have Giannis. And the fact that there were the early rumors of, maybe he wants to leave because, of course, we're thirsty for the next superstar to leave. But, like, I think the Pacers are going to be better than 3-4. I think the Heat, or probably the Heat, but the Knicks, like, I think there's still going to end up being six teams that if you get them into the playoffs, You're going to have to fight for your playoff lives.
Yeah, but you see how the path is starting to open up a little bit. And when the path opens up and when the Cavs play the way that they are, we can't be shocked that all of a sudden these expectations are coming, even if it is just 8 games into the season.
Yeah, but I think that's where I'm just surprised that cooler heads aren't prevailing, that more people aren't going, well, it's 8 games, let's see where this goes. The East probably is going to rebound. I'm not talking about it's wild that we're just going, well, the Bucks suck, so the Cavs have the gilded path.
Honestly, I as great of a start as it is, I think if the Cavs were even just 6-2 or 5-3 and they were in the same spot offensively and defensively, like, our house is in order right now. You're looking around, you got dumpster fires everywhere, and our house is in order. So they're going to prop that up.
Are you expecting the East to be this easy?
No, it's been a joke for the first 8 games. It's been a joke.
It's a cakewalk.
Yeah, it can't be this easy the rest of the season.
I agree. I don't know if it's going to be 2 years ago where the East felt, just impossible. I think it'll be on par with last year, though. And so I think that should impact just putting the cart before.
But the Celtics enough, though, Nick, is enough for me to be like, this stinks that we're in the East. That's how good Boston is.
I think Boston's a little overinflated, but that's for another day. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, next on 92.3 The Fan.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.